Hello and welcome. This is Colleen O'Grady, the host of the Power Your Parenting Moms to Teens podcast. This is a gathering place for moms of preteens, teens, and young adults. My mission is to first and foremost support and encourage you, mom, so that you can live well and reclaim your life. Two, the show will help you have the best possible relationships with your teens so that you can communicate, motivate, and guide them effectively and actually enjoy them. And third, I will bring you top-notch guests who will share the newest in adolescent research and trends so you can be prepared and aware of what your teens are facing today. Always, you will leave each episode armed with practical parenting tips. Welcome back, everyone, to the 267th episode of Power Your Parenting Moms of Teens podcast. I'm Colleen O'Grady, the host of the show. Before we jump into the episode, I want to invite all you wonderful moms to my Ask Colleen Q&A call this Friday. This is where we meet on Zoom, and you can ask me anything about tweens and teens and young adults. And as you know, I've been a marriage and family therapist for 30 years. I have seen the best of teens and young adults and the worst. Come and get some free mom coaching and a little love and encouragement this Friday. Ask Colleen is a free event, and we will meet over lunchtime. This is going to be an upbeat way to start the weekend. If you have a senior who's about to graduate, I know there are plenty of questions you can ask me. So come join a bunch of like-minded moms and let's have some fun. All you need to do is register and go to colleenogrady.com/askColleen and invite your friends. They're going to thank you. So again, to register, all you need to do is go to colleenogrady.com/askColleen. All righty. You are going to love my guest today. In this episode, we talk about how parents and society at large underestimate teenage girls. We talk about amazing things that teenage girls have accomplished and how they are redefining leadership and power with all their accomplishments. Our guest today, Chelsea Gooden, is the author of the USA Today national bestseller, Underestimated: The Power and Wisdom of Teenage Girls, Gallery Books, which has been recommended by Oprah Daily, saying, if you have a teenage girl in your life, you need to read this. Amazon's editorial director chose Underestimated as their editor's pick, Best Nonfiction, featuring it on CBS Mornings. And when Chelsea was recently on Today with Hoda and Jenna, they exclaimed, we couldn't stop talking about your book. Chelsea has been a mentor and an empowerment coach to teenage girls for 16 years. She speaks to audiences about gender justice and serves as a mentorship director of Democracy, which supports and guides girls from underserved communities into leadership positions. So welcome, Chelsea Gooden.
Welcome. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I am so excited that you're here. And you have written a fabulous book called Underestimated: The Wisdom and Power of Teenage Girls. And so I want to just ask you, I mean, writing a book is an act of love. So tell me, why did you write this book?
Well, in this 16 years of this one-on-one time with all of these girls, they kept saying all these wise, smart things to me that would just blow me away. And I felt like the rest of the world was instead minimizing and dismissing them as superficial and dramatic, you know, as we've talked about. But that I could be their microphone and their portal for what they want to say to the world, because mm-hmm. I had been invited into this rare space of trust, getting them to open up. And I wanted to be a translator of sorts that adults could maybe better understand and help them feel heard and seen rather than judged, which is often what teenage girls feel.
Yeah. So I think this podcast, Moms That Are Listening, is really going to help open your eyes to another side of your daughter that you're not actually seeing yet. So one of the questions, I know one of the themes of your book is around power. And I know that's a core part of your message for girls. And you say society is afraid of teenage girls and people are only afraid of things that they have power, that have power over them. So how can teen girls change the narrative around power that has historically emphasized domination, oppression, and self-interest?
Right. So I expand on that in the full power chapter about how we've often, taught women and girls that to become powerful, they kind of have to act like men has been a common narrative, which is what you just pointed out, that history of more domination, oppression, and wealth and status. And what I have seen is that girls become quite powerful when they feel that their voice is valued and respected, and they get to talk about what they care about. And lots of girls have incredible ideas and solutions to the world's problems. This is where we're underestimating them. And so I have found that so many of their solutions are based off of other different qualities that I find very powerful as well, which I emphasize, which are care, generosity, empathy. And, a good example girl shares in there when I ask her what she thinks would be different if women had the majority of leadership roles in the world. And she said, well, right now, someone steals bread and we just throw them in prison and punish them. And she's like, what if instead we asked, why did they steal bread in the first place? And we go fix that. And that's the
Wow.
type of wisdom I'm getting from these girls and why I'm trying to give them the microphone. They really do see the heart and the root of issues from a much more loving perspective. And again, I know people don't necessarily think of teenage girls as loving, or, they think of the fear that you brought up, them kind of, cutting harshly to the truth of things and mean girls and all these kind of negative things. And the girls are tired of just being thrown into the negative box. And I see that's what causes them to close you out and shut down and put up walls and have icy responses. If we're coming at them with all that fear and judgment, then they're gonna be like, yeah, you don't get me. Never mind. I'm gonna be silent over here. But when the girl feels really respected, and I ask her, what do you think the solution is? And she gives an incredible idea, then she starts opening up more and more. And that's when I see empowerment happen.
So I do think probably the key to getting girls to open up is respect, curiosity, that they feel safe. Because I think they can tell with our questions, like, if we're judging them through our questions, and they
Exactly.
can truly tell if we're just really curious.
They 100% can tell. So I talk about that a lot of, in the book about how do you get that genuine curiosity inside you so she can tell rather than a secret agenda, which has that judgment of like hoping that she'll do what you want her to or control her choices. And the more she really feels that genuine curiosity and respect and trust, I find she really rises to the occasion and is and comes up with good ideas. She's like, well, my parent trusts me to make this responsible choice. So I am gonna be responsible. Versus if she's just like, oh, she's making me do that, and then she's like, whatever. It activates
Right.
something different in her.
Yeah, our questions can activate very different parts of our daughters. Or might, I know you're not a mom, but I have seen that real time. And one thing I'm just going to say while I still remember it, you have some great questions at the end of your book. And so, moms, if you don't know kind of what questions you can ask to be curious or understand your daughter or to empower them, these are some great ideas. So just throw that out.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it's a whole appendix in the back. And it's interesting you brought up how I'm not a mom, and I'll add that so much respect and care for the difficult job of being a mom of a teenage girl. And I think why I'm trying to offer this, again, this microphone or portal is because the girls always tell me, oh, you don't have parental vibes. And so then I'm going to tell you everything. It's almost like they've given me their secrets to pass along to the parents. That's the way they kind of, they were heavily involved in the writing of this book, right? Down to editing chapters and giving quotes and coming up with the chapter titles. And I have been asked, what are those parental vibes? Like, what am I doing that's different? Because yes, it may be easier sometimes for me to enter some of these conversations than a parent, and I acknowledge that. But I think the parental vibe is that judgment that we're talking about. And I say that with warmth again and compassion for the parent, because we all have our these inner triggers that are often happen in our teenage years. And we carry those same insecurities into adulthood and we project that onto the kid oftentimes. This leads,
Yeah.
that's what I've seen.
Well, I can definitely tell you a million different parental vibes, but that's another podcast. But I will mention one is I call it the monitor. So a lot of times moms will just try to get their daughters from point A to point B. So did you do your homework? Do you have your shoes for soccer? It's time to leave. Are you ready? You feel controlled or monitored by the questions. That's when you see the attitude.
I so agree. That's so such a smart way of framing it. I so agree. And then also tying the execution to, it's that whole like, well, you got to get good grades. There's a lot of achievement doing focus. That is the A to B, but also just, what were the grades? How did that go? How did that test go? And lots of times I hear from the girls about that achievement focus tying to their worth and their value and just feeling like their parent doesn't care unless they got an A on the test. And then that's it. And because that's kind of they're trying to just knock out their list of asking their kid, how did the test go and so on. But she's hearing a message of like, oh, I guess that's all they care about is how I do on that test type of thing.
Yeah, I hear that all the time is, all my mom cares about are my grades. All my mom cares about is if I do the chores. So, one of your questions that I love, I want to ask this question is you write about being performative and how it's the opposite of being authentic. And so, what do you mean by that? And what about fake it till you make it?
The being performative was really tied to the perfection chapter and the people pleasing chapter, and how we are telling girls, all these shoulds, what they should look like, how they should act, what they should say. And society tells them, parents say it, it comes from every angle. And we think that if they're in this normal box and they're just doing everything right, they're getting the good grades and they're having the extracurricular activities and they're going to get into a good college and then everything will be fine. And it's often a performance of sorts. And it's not actually a girl really connecting to her own real humanity, which we are actually all messy humans that deal with difficult feelings and do things imperfectly. And girls do not hear the narrative that we're all imperfect, that perfection doesn't exist. And when they start hearing that and giving more room for them to just be messy and make mistakes, then that's where I see them really starting to connect to who they authentically are, rather than a people-pleasing narrative that we see again, women carry into adulthood, which is putting everyone else's needs before their own, like a real martyrdom of it's like, okay, is everyone happy? Is everyone good? Because then they'll like you, type of thing. And when I push that all away, I'm like, hey, no, that sounds awful. Like, how are you? That it makes sense that you're feeling awful about this right now. And then would help you right now. What do you need right now? How would you like to handle this? And I really help her start that, form that trigger of her actually checking in with herself and her developing her own choices, her own needs, naming them. Then she's getting in tune with that authentic self. So it could be just the voice of what do I need and figuring that out, but then it starts actually informing her activities in life that she's interested in, just giving her room to explore. Like, do you actually like playing that sport? So often girls, when they're told they're good at one thing and they get affirmed for it, they focus all their time and energy. And then I'll end up asking them later when they're so stressed out, like, do you like doing this? And they're like, no one's asked me that. They haven't even really checked in to see if they like it because we just go, 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 do, do, do.
I see that all the time. Moms will come in and they'll say, let's say dad is really invested that his daughter plays soccer. And so I see the daughter and she just kind of doesn't, like you said, she checked in and she said, I don't like soccer. And it is, I see that so much.
I know
That's
there's
so
certainly with
good.
sports, there's always a familial tradition and pressure with it. I share stories in the book of exactly that happening. And then what's cool though is when you actually ask a girl, what lights you up? What does make you happy? It's sometimes a thing you didn't even realize she was into. And then when you give her space to explore it, she can become excellent at that too. It's almost like we're worried, well, she's so good at that sport though. And it's like she can become great at something that she's interested in too. Girls can be lots of good things. I'm also like a girl to have just space to be playful around this. I'm like, I can be good at that. It's often when I'm talking with a girl, she'll be like, well, I'm a English person, not a math person. And she's deciding that, at 13 years old. And I go, oh, that's it. I'm an English person and a math person. And I'm really good at science and I'm really good at sports and I'm good at dancing. And I continue saying all the things I'm good at, right? And she's just horrified. She can't believe I would own all these things. Like I'm breaking the colossal rule that women can only be good at one thing, and never brag, right? And the girls feel such pressure to stay humble and not have an ego, and it's really minimizing them. So I love to play a game where it's kind of like a fake it till you make it, where I give them space to just brag about themselves, and I use that word brag, which often has this negative tone, but it's playful, and they can kind of live in that energy space that some may call it faking it. But the truth is, she's awesome, right? She just doesn't really know it. It's just gonna feel like faking it for a second. But then when she starts stepping into that and feeling and be like, wait, no, I am good at that. I'm gonna slay this, and she starts saying it, then she feels that inside of her, and that's the birth, of confidence, that space we all want.
I love it. That's so good. So, girls are often associated with having big feelings. So, what do you think about that as a label? And we'll just start there.
I believe that all human beings actually have big feelings, and that adults have just gotten really good at squashing them, stuffing them, repressing them until they explode later in a midlife crisis in their 40s when they're in therapy, right? That is what I have seen in a big way. And that these big feelings that we kind of judge teenage girls for are usually just difficult feelings, things like disappointment, frustration, anger, right? There's not a lot of space for not only girls, but women to feel anger. And that is a normal human emotion. And instead, we're kind of immediately go into fix it and or give advice about it or slap positivity. Well, it's not that bad, because we feel discomfort seeing a girl in pain, right? But life is full of painful moments, and we are processing painful feelings sometimes. That is a normal thing. But when a girl kind of gets that coming at them, that fixing and so on, she shuts down and is like, oh, I'm bad. I'm bad for feeling that. So I better stuff it away. Instead, love to just honestly, all they need is someone to usually be like, oh my gosh, yeah, that makes sense. That sounds awful. I'm so sorry you're feeling frustrated right now. I try to use the word she used exactly. And then that's it, and if there is space, I might ask as a question, like, do you want my thoughts on it? Do you want any, or do you want me to just listen right now? I just ask her as a question what she needs. And then most of the time, she just wants someone to listen. And then they relax and they're just like, oh, thanks for understanding me. Like, no one understood, and all I did was listen, giving space for feelings for people to actually process them and then also name them. I include a feelings wheel at the back of the book because in those moments, we have a limited vocabulary and we're like, I'm sad. I'm angry. There's like five words all of a sudden we have at the top of our brain. And the feelings wheel expands out. And I have found that when a girl lands on the actual more specific feeling, I know me, I remember so well when I realized disappointment is such a harsher, more intense feeling than people give it credit for. And when I really leaned into, oh no, I am disappointed right now. And this is a hard feeling, and just named it. There's tons of research to support how just naming the feeling, feeling the feeling is what needs to happen.
Yeah, because it makes you feel more compassionate towards yourself. Like just naming it, like, oh, a part of you can be compassionate. So one of the things that I help moms with and help them connect to what you're saying, it's a funny blind spot in moms. It's really hard for us to see our daughters really upset. So many moms say, I just go in to try to make her happy. And then she yells at her daughter because it's just so frustrating. And so, what I tell these moms when I'm speaking is I say, okay, like when you're really upset and you tell your partner, your husband, oh, this story about why you're really upset, and he just tries to cheer you up, how do you feel? No, we want to be heard. We want to go, oh my gosh, that we want the empathy.
Totally. I mean, a lot of the book is use these tools that I've learned from teenage girls for everyone in your life. And so, yeah, that's such a good technique you're giving them to create empathy and put in their shoes. Yeah, but that holding space for that discomfort to me is the key for so much because it creates resilience for them. They feel safer to make mistakes where they don't absorb it into their identity. That is something I see with girls in a big way is the fear of failure. And if they make a mistake, they are a failure forever. And I don't see that with boys. I mean, I've worked with boys too, and boys make mistakes, not that big a deal. They really brush it off in a completely different way.
I agree. Girls go way big into that. So why is it important for parents to heal their inner teenager?
So often when you get in that fight with the girl or you have that kind of contentious relationship already, I have seen that has to do with the triggers inside of you, right? Again, back to those wounds that happened in our own teenage years that we've carried for many years. And then they get activated by the teenage girl in front of you, understandably. And then, but you end up acting out of that But like a reactivity, right? Of your own triggers, your own story. I always say you're kind of projecting your story onto the girl. And the girl's like, wait, that's not how I see it, or that's not how I think. So instead, she shuts you out and closes you out. And by healing, doing our own healing work, we deactivate those so that we can come to the girl with that genuine curiosity we were talking about earlier. So she can feel that tone of genuine curiosity. And I mean, we could all use healing around these topics too, self-doubt, shame, right? Like that's a huge one for both girls and adults that we carry into adulthood.
Was this another one around feelings? Okay. So when a teenage girl is experiencing a difficult feeling, so what's the best thing parents or concerned adults can do?
It's back to that listening, but I would say, hey, it's okay to have difficult feelings too. I'd actually vocalize it and say, hey, it's totally fine if you're feeling upset right now. It makes sense. And actually, not making her feel bad for feeling it. And then saying, I can hold space for it. I can handle it. Right. Again, a girl's going to feel like, oh, I don't want you to be in a bad place. I don't want to take you down. Like they'll often caretake the people around them too, not to share their own hard feelings. So you need to make sure that it's the focus is from parent to daughter or adult to girl, right? That it's like, no, I'm here for you to hold space for this difficult feeling that is totally normal and human and makes sense. And I'm not here to provide commentary on it. And the more you can just say that out loud, it builds that emotional safety where she can open up and process these feelings.
Yeah, because the girl takes clues from your face. So if you, as a mom, look panicked, and a lot of times we, as moms, we panic and we blow it up in our heads is really awful. And then the girls see that in our face, and then they not only have the difficult feeling, but they also go into shame.
Yes, exactly. And then they want to kind of caretake of like, well, it's not that bad. Like, dial it down. You know, they don't want to be dealing with your reaction to it too when they're trying to just deal with their own reaction.
Or they get really, really angry
Yes, exactly.
and may say a few curse words.
The shame, though, is definitely one of the biggest things I've seen impact girls on so many different fronts.
Yeah, talk more about that.
Well, I would say the girls always, by the way, want me to bring up slut shaming on these platforms. And they're always like, it's such an issue for them because they feel so judged that they can't do anything right. You know, they never can wear the right thing. Everyone's going to judge them, you know, and they're so tired of it. They're tired of a dress code that shames them in a way that, I mean, like a tank top and a bra strap. I can't tell you how many girls I've had sent home for that. And all it does is just make them feel shame about their body, makes them tells them that their body is dangerous, and it puts all the responsibility and blame on them that they should be managing all the boys' inclinations. And it feels super unfair to them. And they don't get it. And they're like, what? Why is this all on me? And they hate it. And that shame really sets up long-term wounds, I think, to a girl's relationship to her own body. I've had girls message me on, you know, on social media, just being like, "Oh my gosh, my brother's friends called me a slut," and it was like when she was 13, right? And she was wearing like short shorts, and she's like, "And I never worn short shorts again, and it's been 6 years, and I just feel awful about myself." And it was just like this one comment that happened, and we don't realize how wounding that is. And then the shame about eating and beauty. I just had a girl on an airplane I was sitting next to this week, and I told her I would talk about it on a podcast where she told me how shamed she feels for what she eats, where just real subtle commentary where people will be like, oh, you're eating that much? Oh, that seems like a lot. Oh, wow, you can eat a lot. You know, where they, why are they saying that? Why are people commenting on what she's eating? She decided to share that with me. She shared it after I told her about how people comment on girls' bodies and what they look like and their beauty all the time. And girls are just so over it and just really take it as judgment. And then also adult women shaming their own bodies and beauty in front of girls. That has a huge impact that, again, is pretty subtle, we think, but the girls absorb it like crazy.
I absolutely agree. What can parents do about that? And how can parents reframe flaws to celebrate uniqueness?
First, kind of dealing with that beauty element or that shaming element, that is where we come back to that healing, that inner teenage girl for them, because we have our own harmful beauty narratives, right? Our own harmful relationships to our own body. And that is where, if you can do your own healing work, then you can show up and just meet the girl exactly where she's at and not feel like you need to comment on her looks and body and beauty and food. So the only thing you have truly in your control is yourself, and a girl will feel that from you. The kind of the reframing flaws question you just asked kind of brings it back to that making room for mistakes and a girl's relationship to perfection. And if we stay in the beauty side of this conversation, right? A girl thinks she needs to look a perfect way, a certain way to be perfect. And that's just not true. And the more we can actually celebrate, I mean, I tend to have like messy hair, but that's kind of my look, right? This curly, beachy, messy look. And so someone might think it's a flaw or not normal beauty standards, but because I celebrate it and own it as my own authentic self, and I'll verbalize and use that as an example when I'm talking with girls, that's kind of the reframing so that it doesn't feel instead like I'm not subscribing to the perfect beauty standards, and instead I'm just owning my authenticity.
So, do you have a story like that with some of your girls, how you kind of turned a quote flaw into uniqueness and
Yeah. Well,
celebrate
one I
it?
share in the book is whenever she was working on an English essay, she kind of all the sentences just spiraled in her head and she was having a hard time just getting out her thoughts, right? And she would beat herself up, which is usually what happens when we're not doing it the quote unquote right way. I was like, what does that feel like to you when that happens in your brain? And she was called it a swirl. And I was like, oh, cool. So it's like the Nina swirl, right? And I started bringing playfulness and positivity to it. It's her cool thing she does in her brain, right? And we talked about how it could be creative because she's connecting dots that maybe she wouldn't normally see. And it was her understanding how her own brain works in a positive lens rather than a negative one. And it helped her own it in a way. She's like, we created space for in her process where there's a Nina swirl that happens. And then
Yes.
swirl happens, she has a new tool on how to flow with it rather than resisting it and judging it and feeling shame for it. Ended up kind of changing her whole writing style to flow with this quote unquote flaw, which is really just a unique part of who she was that just needed some positivity.
I love it. So I'm going to go back to something and then I'll piggyback on what you just said. I think, okay, so moms, you're listening and you might think, well, I mean, how do I even know it's my inner teenager when I'm parenting? How would you know? Since I have parented one, it's when you get to a place of panicky, especially around body image. If you feel panicky, the cheerleader who might have gained a few pounds, if you get panicky about them not doing well with school, the panic is a clue. Oh, a lot of moms will panic about that they don't have friends or they don't have good friends or they've been rejected by friends. So the panic is something that your daughter is going to feel, and then she's going to think something's wrong with her.
Yes.
So it's a great invitation for you to kind of look inside and kind of explore your panic. Like, what's my panic about?
Yeah. Oh, I love how you just phrased that. You're so right. I so agree. And panic is a type of fear, right? It's that fear
Yes.
energy, that worrying energy that, yes, I think you're right, is a total clue.
So one of in my book, Dial Up the Dream, one of the things is I'm having moms kind of look at their mom story and make sense of it. And I just talk about there is one proverb that said something like, just like a grinding wheel, so does one person sharpen another. And I think a lot of times we as moms sharpen our kids, but our kids really sharpen us also. And you can see that as a gift. So your panic is a gift for you to look at. You can evolve into an even better person.
Oh, I love that. Yes. I mean, that's what happened to me, right? In writing this book, I wrote it because I learned more from the girls than I ever taught them because they
Yes.
helped me heal my inner teenager, right? Anytime I had those things you're talking about, they helped me become the better person that I could be. And I think about that in discomfort in general. When instead of avoiding discomfort or powering through discomfort, which is certainly how I was raised, doing that more often, now I see discomfort as information, as a kind of a gift of like, okay, what do I need to learn about myself in this space and how can I grow?
So, what were you like as a teenager?
I was certainly very obsessed with trying to do everything perfectly. I was definitely a perfectionist, high achieving. Oh, I thought if I just get good grades, then nothing bad will happen to me in life. So achievement focused. And I think that was me trying to be a stabilizing force, in the world around me. And my parents got divorced. And honestly, their divorce wasn't even that bad or chaotic, but everyone's going to have some type of chaotic element during this time of their life, whether it's social circles or it could be so many different things. And how I tried to stabilize that for myself and convince myself that everything was okay and I was okay, I think really defined how I moved through the world until later in life, right? I had to start unpacking these things and feel some of my feelings, my suppressed feelings.
So a girl who you see and she's kind of overthinks a lot of things and she compares herself to other people and so she really freezes up around friends. Like, how would you help someone like that?
I get into that in the self-doubt chapter a little bit, that inner critic inside of our brain, which is, oh my goodness, the whole book could have been about this, right? Me entering that space with what is that voice saying inside your head? And I love asking her, whose voice is it, first of all? And the girl's main response usually is society's voice. And I think it's super helpful because it is in lots of ways. Sometimes they say it's a parent's voice, which is harder, and that's the circumstance, and so on. What is cool though is when they realize it's not their true inner voice, and that it's not the one that's really connected to their authenticity, and instead it's that kind of mean self-doubt that they can separate from when they just acknowledge it. So we actually do kind of brain draining in that way of sorts, or just acknowledging it, bringing awareness around it so that she can catch it in its tracks so it doesn't take over in those moments. So you can step back and be like, wait, is this true? Is this my inner voice? Or is this just the brain is so often just trying to stay the same or stay safe and what it knows and it loves fear, creates fear narratives so quickly. And I love talking about that with girls. And this is a super highly individualized process that I'm sure you're familiar with every girl, but I think every human being, they're how they confront and reckon with that inner voice is a huge part of anyone's journey.
Yeah, so what you do is really help them identify that voice and then kind of separate from it a little bit,
Exactly. Yeah,
give it some
exactly.
room. So talk about like the difference of likability versus authenticity.
Well, likability is often defined by what other people or outside world external validation is gonna think about, whether it's the activities you're doing or what you look like, or it's an external system that defines if you are likable or not. And authenticity is when you like yourself, like you're connected to what you like and what you're doing and how you're spending your time. And then when that happens, when it's an internal connection, the rest doesn't matter, right? We stop defining our worth off that external part. But I find getting into that authenticity, I always lean into a girl's weirdness. And I use that word weird really intentionally because I think it sparks insecurity also. People are like, I don't know if I want to be weird. I personally am a big fan of being weird, but that's because I've gone on this journey. But when someone first hears it, they're like, I'm not weird. And I'm like, no, everyone is a little weird. Like, what is yours? And I kind of lean into that space that may be insecurity, but actually to me reveals a lot of truths about who they are, what they might actually be interested in, but the world has told them that it's not cool or it's not a value. And often we're trying to be normal, right? Like everyone wants their kid to be normal. And I see that as actually quite diluting of who they are. When we lean into the weirdness, that's when real magic happens.
Oh my gosh, that is fantastic. So, how do you say that? If you say, hey, lean into your weirdness, or how do you ask that teen that?
I'll just say, well, what do you think makes you weird? And we laugh and talk about it, then they'll sit with it. I mean, they don't mind the question. Again, if it's said with curiosity, I'll usually say, like, I love being weird personally. I'll try to own it myself. Oh, I'll share my own stuff. I always try to incorporate myself in these conversations so they don't feel like alone in it. I tend to not use the word unique because that does achievement focus again. That's a way more how you're special in the world, which it's similar, special, unique, it's similar, but I find that weird is the way into the
Oh,
space.
I do love that because it feels very free. Like I'm just
Yeah.
going to be weird and I don't
Exactly.
care about what other people are thinking.
You don't care what people think, right? And that's a big theme of this book is not what is that space where we stop caring what other people think and we can just be ourselves, we can be listened to the way we are, loved the way we are. What is that space? That's what I care about with this book.
Because I think so many girls, like in a cafeteria or walking down the halls, Their brains are so freaking busy in terms of like taking in external cues from everybody,
Yep.
all the people walking by. I've heard several girls say, like, when they're sitting down at lunch, they're so overthinking, what if I say this, what will they think about me? And I just love this weirdness because it's like you don't even have to think about what anybody else is thinking. You can just be weird.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's that reframing. It's back to that kind of reframing, reclaiming that word and what it is. But yeah,
Yeah.
the end of the book is liberation, right? Like any way that we can feel liberated from the rest of the world's stories and tools of validation. Like, yes, the not caring about what people think is everything.
So, what is the main thing that these teen girls want their moms to know?
If I give again that overall idea is that they feel judged and shamed. And that they're smarter than you think they are, that they want to be a part of the conversation. They're tired of everyone just telling them what they should do or how they should be, and they want their voice incorporated in the conversation and respected.
So you say worrying is perceived control. So how can parents reframe worry?
Well, we've touched on it, right? It's this that panicky mode you were talking about, that. So to me, it's back to that same solution of dealing with their own triggers. If they're really feeling fear, to me, again, fear is a clue, like you just said. So, because worrying isn't gonna help her, actually. That's where it's the perceived control. As much as we think, oh, I'll just think of every scenario and then, and then I'll do this and I'll do that. It's actually a very controlling energy that the girl will tend to reject. She will feel when you come at her with ease. I would say ease is the opposite of worry. She feels that self-trust, right? Like you trust her, and then she builds self-trust. And self-trust to me is actually what confidence is when she can trust herself to make good choices, that she's, her parents not just doubting her over there at every turn.
So in my first book, Dial Down the Drama, I start with powerless parenting messages that we as moms get from the culture. And one of them, it's my job to worry 24/7 because it feels like you're being a really good mom.
Mom.
Yeah, but what you're saying is absolutely true because what it does is it keeps a mom highly in that monitor mode, like I said before.
Yes.
And trying to control everything. And then, one of the main tasks for a girl who's going into emerging young adulthood is to learn how to self-manage. So, if they're, and to learn, like you said, to trust themselves and see that they can do that. The good news is it's no fun for a mom to worry 24/7. That's so exhausting.
They're gonna do more good by actually releasing the worry. I mean, is what I'm, hearing from you, and I know what has been my experience, and trying to acknowledge that payoff when you see it work and be like, oh, wait, I didn't worry and obsess about this, and it went okay. And she actually developed an empowering self-trust moment, and really acknowledge when that happens so you can be like, okay, the worrying wasn't the key here. So you can start
Yes.
letting go of that practice.
As you know, the worrying part in our brain doesn't problem solve. So if you can actually take the worry and say, I mean, is there anything constructive I can do? Then great. And then dump the worry. But that's it. I mean, I love to worry. So, I mean, something I've constantly worked on. So.
I have too. I've worked so hard. I know. In the book, I call worry fear's executive assistant.
Absolutely, yes. We need to fire both of them. So, what are some of the amazing things that teenage girls have accomplished? What have you seen?
Oh my goodness. When we let them step into their power, that's the best. I've had a girl fundraise $40,000 through an entire event she threw on to build in a school in El Salvador, changing the entire nature of that
Wow.
community's access to education.
Wow.
Yeah. And I have had girls, I could go on and on. They, during the pandemic, filmed a whole short film about teenagers' mental health. And I've had, definitely really cool type of fundraising activism. They really care about making the world a better place. And when you support, like, what do you care about? What do you want to, how do you want to make a difference? They really rise to the occasion. That's again where we don't want to underestimate them. I mean, thinking like in the radical honesty, I talk about speaking truth to power. Lots of times them just speaking their voice to systems. There was a girl at a school where they all had to wear white dresses at their graduation. And she was like, "What? Really? We're still doing this?" She's like, "I'm not now being introduced to society as a bride available for marriage." She's like, "I'm graduating from my high school." And so she really went to the administration and brought it. And they were a little like, "Wait, what? Change?" You know? And she changed it. So then to this day, now they don't have to. I mean, a girl can if she wants, but it's about having girls have more choices, right? But I bring up Malala Yousafzai in the book about how she was just a teenager, a 15-year-old, right? Who just spoke truth to power to the most, militant organization and one of the most powerful in the world at the time. They shot her. Like, she was that powerful, just using her voice as a teenager. And thankfully, she survived and won the Nobel Peace Prize years later. And to this day, now she has one of the most successful nonprofits giving girls access to education, right? Like, they messed up. They activated her power, right? I love to shine light on that.
I love the title of your book, Underestimated. That's so good. You can sum up your whole book in that one word. It's very, very good. So,
Thank you.
what is the last advice you would like to give the moms?
Well, actually, this has been such a great conversation. Thank you. I really feel like we hit on some good things here. I think that however you can build conversations where her voice is heard, right? So a lot of people are a mom is reading the book with her teenage daughter right now. And that's been so cool because it opens up conversations you normally it would be uncomfortable to bring up out of the blue, and creating a framework, groundwork for them to have these types of discussions. Also moms seeking community. This book's perfect for a book club with moms, right? Because the way the chapter titles are done, everyone's going to have something to say about people pleasing or self-doubt, in a group discussion. But finding that type of community with other moms to be real with each other, there's a lot of that performative nature where we're all putting on a good show that our kids are doing great, right? They're getting good grades and no, like it's okay to be real and say, hey, my girl's struggling with this. And that's okay. We're all human here. The more space and room we can give women and girls enter their whole to experience their full humanity, I think would be great.
I mean, that is the joy of my work, is working with moms who can finally tell their own truth and watch them become liberated and let some of those things go and know that they're okay and it's all normal.
Exactly. Yeah, that we're not alone. I mean, I'm constantly telling girls that. Well, you're not alone. I feel that too.
Well, this has been a huge treat talking to you today.
Thank you. I love this
So,
conversation. Thank you.
no, it's been really good. Really good. I am sure that they can find your book anywhere that books are sold.
Indeed. Yeah. So USA Today bestseller now. Just found out
Woohoo!
a few days ago.
Congratulations.
Yeah. And that follow me on Instagram at Chelsea Gooden. I'm doing speaking engagements in a big way, whether it's for teenage girls empowerment workshops or at schools for parents. I'm loving doing that too right now.
That's great. And do you have a website?
Yeah, just chelseagooden.com. Find all the things there. Thank you.
Okay, I'll put it all in the show notes.
Thanks so much.
All right, have a great day. This concludes this week's episode of Power Your Parenting Moms with Teens podcast. If this podcast has been helpful, I would absolutely love it if you could go to Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star review. This makes it easier for other moms like you to find the support and encouragement they need. Also, my award-winning best-selling books, Dial Down the Drama, Reducing Conflict, Reconnecting with Your Teenage Daughter, and my newest release book, Dial Up the Dream, Making Your Daughter's Journey to Adulthood the Best for Both of You. You can find both of these books wherever books are sold. And you can find other great resources and contact me at ColleenO'Grady.com. And that has 2 L's and 2 E's.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.